It's 8:19. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Joining me now in the studio, Summit County Councilmember Roger Armstrong. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Well, let's start with the fair. Were you out there? Did you get to experience it yourself?
I did. I went out. We served lunch to the seniors on Friday. That's always a fun thing to do. On Friday and on Saturday, we participated in the parade and had an ice cream social. So I was able to get out there and look around. It looked like a good fair. It was pretty well attended. We'll get the final attendance numbers at some point, but it looked like it was success. The first time that they've had carnival rides in years because of the space, it's tough to configure that. So people looked like they were having fun.
Okay.
Great music.
So in terms of, finding another fair site, where are we?
Still looking. We've had a variety of discussions and, we're kicking tires and trying to figure out whether parcels will fit with what we want to do, whether it makes sense. So we're still going through a due diligence process with one or more properties. And at some point over the next couple of months, I hope we have something identified.
The goal to keep it in Colville?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I don't know if it's in Colville proper, but it will be in North Summit County.
Okay. let's see. You were at the open house with the Environmental Protection Agency on Tuesday. What was your reaction to what you heard?
I thought it was actually quite useful. I think that, a lot of the landowners in the 40 corridor in particular have been uncertain about what's going on, and people have had questions. Other people have been generally unaware that we have some CERCLA Superfund sites in that corridor and actually just inside Park City as well that have to be cleaned up. So I think it was the EPA explained well, I thought, the process in terms of where they are at this point in working with United Park City Mines to get the 40 corridor cleaned up. They're in the middle of the ECA process. That's the environmental evaluation and the cost analysis. So that should produce some proposed alternatives for cleaning up the 40 corridor by early 2016 is what we heard from the EPA. So at least we'll have something that's tangible that we can look at fairly soon.
Yeah. Why aren't we starting upstream, though? You clean up below, and if we've got still, tailings or whatever in the stream creek bed above, aren't we just...
They are going to start upstream. The plan right now is to clean from the top down. So upstream really means Park City, and Park City is actually farther ahead in their process for getting things cleaned up. The EPA is actually extremely pleased with their interactions with Park City in terms of how fast Park City is moving, how thoughtful they're being about getting things cleaned up. So I think the plan is to, they won't start, once we get once the EPA gets the documents approved and the plan approved with United Park City Mines, that cleanup probably doesn't start until 2019 or 2020. So I think Park City will be much farther along in its process, I suspect, by then, than United Park Mines.
And what we haven't heard at all is any kind of cleanup, say, from the lower Silver Creek watershed down to Wanship. And, of course, you sat on the Blue Ribbon Soils Commission and heard the history of when the mines, before the tailings ponds in Prospector, when it all went down and ended up there, like in Wanship, and killed cattle and horses, so we know it's there.
Right, the beautiful red water that we saw down there and the newspaper stories about the dead livestock. Yeah, I assume that the plan will, I assume once the majority of that waste is taken out of the 40 corridor, that becomes less of a problem, but it's a good point. I don't know what their plans are for that.
Yeah. So in the meantime, folks who have property along the 40 corridor, including Park City and Summit County with the triangle parcel, no development until it's cleaned up.
Well, Park City has their soils ordinance. Summit County has its soils ordinance. And in the 40 corridor, you can't develop until your property is cleaned up. And the pinch right now is that because the EPA is working with what they've identified as a potentially responsible party, United Park City Mines, they want a comprehensive cleanup. The ideal would be a comprehensive cleanup from a single source so that the EPA has some control over how it's cleaned up, can monitor it, and keep track of it. The alternative is under the state, you could, as a landowner, clean up under what's called the voluntary cleanup, the VCUP, through the State Department of Environmental Quality. The state has suspended that. They're not giving out VCUP permits anymore at the request of the EPA because the EPA wants to keep that process consolidated with the one potentially responsible party. They want to make sure that they don't have a patchwork of cleanup so that you're cleaning up your property to one standard by one technique and somebody else is doing it by another. As you know, we have storage issues. Where do we take the contaminated waste? The expenses associated with that. So they would like to try and figure out a plan all in one place to take care of it all at once. So they've asked the state to do that. That doesn't mean the state couldn't reinstitute the VCUP process at some point. If, you know, for example, if the something interfered with the cleanup process in the 40 corridor and that were to be delayed for a long period of time, I think we would probably press for that VCUP process to come back into force to allow people to do something so that we could find a way to clean it up. The idea of allowing that waste to sit there for another 20 or 30 years is distasteful to me. So
it could be 3 to 5 years, right? I mean, in terms of their timeline before property owners there along that 40 corridor could be
longer. I mean, you know, if they're not going to start the cleanup process until 2020, the cleanup process is not going to be completed in, you know, theoretically, I shouldn't say that, without a plan in place. It's impossible to tell how long it could take, but discussions that we've had in the past have indicated that it could be a 10-year process.
All right. Any discussion about the where we put this stuff? My understanding was that the EPA was holding some space open in Richardson Flat for the lower Silver Creek area.
Yeah, Richardson Flat is one of the locations that has been targeted. As you know from the Blue Ribbon Soils Commission, Tooele is the only other alternative I'm aware of in terms of taking it out. But I think that there are other possibilities as well. Some of that depends on what the land is used for. Capping in place could be a possibility, and I think that that's what United Park City Mines has to figure out. And that will be part of that analysis that comes in under the ECA. They'll make various proposals, and some of those proposals, I assume, will assume how the land might be used and make proposals along those lines. You know, you could theoretically, for example, if you were going to, discussions I think we had a long time ago, if you were to build a daycare center, you're going to have a much higher standard for cleanup than if you had open space or a golf course or a parking lot. So I think that that is some of what United Park City Mines has to figure out and will be part of their proposal. And then what the EPA and Summit County and Park City has to look at and make sure that it fits with our vision of land use in those areas and all the areas that are going to be cleaned up.
Yeah. So the fact that these soils are a result of a mining operation, they're known as bevel soils, correct? Have we had any further discussion with the EPA in terms of what Summit County is going to do with bevel soils in the future new landfill?
We've not. No formal discussions at all about what we're going to do with that. They've not made a formal request to us. As you know, the city mentioned that they would like to explore that as an alternative, and I believe that, you know, we're having some discussions with the city about that, but we're nowhere near making decisions on that. I mean, I think it's premature.
You're an attorney by trade. You raised a couple of questions Tuesday night with the EPA attorney on staff there. The responsibility for cleanup does fall on United Park City Mines Company, but you asked if liability could fall on others because of what you call this chain of title. Can you explain what your concern is?
Yeah, and here's where I get in trouble. I'm going to qualify it. I'm an entertainment attorney. I'm not an environmental attorney. I play one on TV, so... But what I recall from environmental law from very long ago is that when the EPA steps in and invokes CERCLA, that everybody in the chain of title has some strict liability for contamination on the property. Those properties aren't on the national priorities list. If they were, the EPA could come in and spend their own money to clean them up and then sue essentially everybody theoretically in the chain of title to recover the costs of that cleanup. Those aren't MPL-listed properties. They're prohibited from being MPL-listed properties by regulations that were passed several years ago. So that means that they identify a party in the chain of title to clean it up, in this case, United Park City Mines. So my question for the EPA, and it was mostly to try and get clarification for the landowners as to any potential liability they may have. Under one scenario, theoretically, United Park City Mines could clean up the property, expend their money to do that, get a sign-off from the EPA, and then turn around and sue other landowners in the chain of title to recover their costs of cleanup. The response from the EPA was, depends. And I'm sure it does. I'm sure it's a fact analysis. If somebody in that chain of title had been running some sort of a smelter or some kind of mill or something on that property, there's probably a chance that they could be liable if they simply were engaged in agriculture that did not contribute in any way to the contamination. They might not. And then the second question I had for the EPA is, if Oneida Park City Mines were to fall out, because they've got some solvency questions right now, if they were to fall out and not have the financial resources to clean up, would the EPA have some means of going after individual landowners to try and get them to clean it up? And again, they didn't answer that clearly, other than depends.
Yeah, so do we know who is in that chain of title?
No, it would be the same as if you were going to buy the property. You would run a title search and find out who owned the property going all the way back to the time of the first contamination, if you could identify that. And here, that's going to be fairly far back because of the mining activity.
So I think what I heard from EPA representatives is that they have hopeful expectations that United Park will be solvent and will finish what they've started.
They indicated quite clearly that they are proceeding, assuming that United Park City Mines is going to take care of this problem.
All right. I wanted to ask you about your reaction just to the fallout that we have seen in the engineering department. We've got a search now underway for a new county engineer. In the meantime, lost some valuable institutional knowledge.
Yeah, anytime you've got changeover of personnel, I'm not aware of the changes that have taken place other than what I've heard from you on the radio. And, you know, the council tries to stay out of personnel matters. That's Tom Fisher's bailiwick and Brian Bellamy. So I'm not aware of, and they've not shared with us any reasons for whatever changes have taken place. So what I will share that what I said to Bob Jasper several years ago is the county's in a position at this point where our problems are sophisticated problems. We need sophisticated individuals sitting in those chairs that are solving those problems. So whether it's the staff that left or the staff that they're looking to replace them with, we need competent people that are very, very good at their jobs and that are visionary in terms of solving the problems that we have. And as long as they're out recruiting for that, then I'm not going to have any problems with it.
All right. And what's next for Mountain Accord?
I don't know. Phase two. I assume that they're proceeding along with the NEPA process and getting things together. I know that Tom and others on staff have had some discussions about the transportation study that we're going to head into, and they're trying to figure out the parameters of that and how it's going to be structured and who's going to lead it. So those discussions are ongoing.
All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
That's all I've got.
All right, Roger. Thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
Summit County Council Member Roger Armstrong. Well, coming up on Monday, August 17th, the Park City School District will welcome the community to a community conversation featuring Gary Marks. He's the president for the Center of Public Outreach, and he joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. So if this is a community conversation, what are we going to talk about?
Well, we're going to talk about societal trends. I've just done a book during the past year titled 21 Trends for the 21st Century, Out of the Trenches and Into the Future. And we're going to be talking with the school system staff on Monday and then with the community meeting on Monday evening about these trends and about their implications for education, their implications for community, their implications for all of us wherever we live on the planet, in fact.
Well, before we talk about some of those trends, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you think that the district, I mean, is it this book that the district brought you in to talk about?
Yeah, we're there because I think it's always important for any organization. And I've worked on six continents and have worked with a number of organizations of various types, many schools, school systems, colleges, universities. And one of the things that you find among great organizations is that they're always trying to get better, no matter how good they are. And the best ones are the ones who are always trying to get better, usually, and they always have an eye on the future. So it's important for us to back off to the big picture from time to time. We get so involved with whatever we do, whether we're working as educators, whether we're working in real estate or running a restaurant or involved in some other walk of life, that it's good for us to back off occasionally and take a look at the big picture, at those forces in society that impact everyone, and ask, what could their implications be for us? What are the opportunities that are there? What are some of the concerns we might need to step forward and think about or deal with? So I think it's especially important for educators and others in the community to take a look at the big picture, all of those things that are happening while we're going about our day's work. And that's what we'll be doing, and asking everyone to think about what are the implications of these trends for us, and possibly even thinking about, how would we describe our school system for the future, looking out 5, 10 years? How would we describe our community of the future? One thing that I must say about Park City is that this is almost a habit in Park City, and that's why you see such a progressive community, always seeking out, always reinventing itself. And it's a dynamic community, and my hat's off to everyone there, your community leadership, and certainly your school leadership, because the schools form the foundation for any community. They are the foundation that holds everything else together and prepares leaders and citizens for the future.
So you do have a bad background in education, is my understanding. These 21 trends that you write about, are they about education, or are they just about the trend of, the world here?
Well, these are trends that affect everyone, but because schools and school systems, colleges, universities, are of this world, they are not separate from it, schools need to pay attention to them. I spent about 20 years as a senior executive with the American Association of School Administrators. I was a senior administrator in school systems in Omaha, Nebraska, and in the Denver area. So I have a lot of background in education. But these trends, while I won't go through necessarily all 21 of them, they fall into a number of spheres. One is the demographic sphere. There are trends in demographics such as the flow of generations. As you know, we have a millennial generation that is now coming on full steam and now is at a point that it's making up a majority of our workforce in the country. Diversity is another demographic trend. Aging. There's a technology sphere where we discuss not only developments in technology, but this growing concern about identity and privacy, because that in itself is creating an array of new, often urgent concerns and a lot of demands that they be addressed. There's the economic sphere, where we address the economy as well as jobs and careers. The energy and environment sphere, where we talk about energy, the need to make sure that as our population grows, we have an ample energy supply, coupled with that, the environment. And then we also have written in our book about sustainability. We cover international global issues, the education and learning sphere, where we discuss personalization. We look at the importance of releasing ingenuity and back off to look at what we need in terms of the depth, breadth, and purposes of education. We have a public and personal leadership sphere and personal well-being, because, we need to take care of ourselves while we're paying attention to everything else. Yep. That, in a nutshell, is kind of the range of trends that we address, and to some extent we'll address a number of them in these presentations.
Well, certainly a trend that we're hearing about, is technology changing so fast that by the time we get kids through school and college and into the workforce, the education they've studied so hard for really isn't the information that they need to know. So how do you address something like that?
Well, with technology, I think we need to be adaptable. We need to be flexible. We need to understand the importance of technology in our world. As we move into each age, for example, we moved from an agricultural age into an industrial age, and now we're moving into a global knowledge information age, even an age of knowledge creation and breakthrough thinking. And that's another reason why education is so very important. But one thing that happens as we move into a new age, like from the agricultural age into the industrial age, is that these changes are sometimes driven in part by the fact that our lifestyles and our technologies have outgrown our infrastructure. And we've seen that in massive economic events that took place back in the 1870s, in the 1920s and 30s, and even with our recent Great Recession, as we emerge from that Great Recession. What really happened was that our lifestyles and our technologies had had outgrown our physical infrastructure. And we were in a situation such as, you know, getting up in the morning and trying to put a size 12 foot in a size 8 shoe. It simply doesn't fit. So we need to constantly make sure that we have the kind of physical infrastructure we need. And also, we need to have the kind of social infrastructure we need. By social infrastructure, we're talking about education, making sure we have a good environment, availability of health, and a lot of other things. But you're right, technology just continues to evolve, and with every possibility, there comes a new possibility. About 60% of new jobs are going to require skills that only 20% of the population currently have, according to Shaping Tomorrow. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics tells us that for someone entering the job force right now, they can expect to have on average about 11 jobs during their lifetimes and probably have 7 career changes. So that means that we need to be flexible. We need to have an understanding of the importance of technology and the fact that technology is going to continue to grow and continue to change. Technology is never static. You know, it's always emerging, and we can talk more about that if you'd like.
Well, I don't have much time, but I want to just hit on this really quickly here before we've got to end this, though. And that's this another trend that we're seeing here in the schools, and that is doing away with the education of cursive writing. Where do you fall down on this? Fall on this? I mean, certainly there's people saying, "Oh my goodness, our children won't even be able to read the Constitution." But there's others who say that the slower, deliberate process of writing letters really helps with learning, and we're going to lose that by putting all of our kids on computers.
Well, I think there are several baskets when it comes to writing. And I think the growing concern now is that... Hello?
Hello, I'm here. We can still hear you. Are you okay?
Yes, I'm here, Leslie. I was hearing another voice. But one of the concerns that has grown is that with Twitter, for example, you know, we're not paying a lot of attention to the full spelling of our words. We have very short messages that we're sending to each other. It's probably very good to be able to express ourselves on many different platforms. So, you know, I think that that's an area that's developing, but I think the bottom line is that we need to be able to communicate. We need to be able to communicate well, whether we're writing, whether we're speaking, whether we're using nonverbal communication. So, you know, we can have the discussion about cursive versus printed letters versus sending short messages online, but the real concern is that we need to be able to communicate in a way that we're understood, not just in a way that satisfies us that we have sent a message, but in a way that satisfies us that when someone has gotten that message, it's understandable.
Okay.
That it communicates what we meant.
I need to leave it at that. But Gary Marks, he'll be in Park City with a community conversation on Monday starting at 5:30 p.m. at the Park City High School Lecture Hall. Thanks for your time this morning.
Leslie, thank you so very, very much. And I'm looking forward to being with that talent pool in the Park City schools and also in the Park City community. Thanks so much.
Well, next Friday is the final day to apply for the 22nd Leadership Park City class. On the phone to details, I've got the founder of Park City Leadership, Miles Redeman. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me on.
So Friday the 21st is the last chance. It's an online application at parkcity.org?
It is. It's parkcity.org, and this course is our year-long award-winning community leadership program. And I don't think it's gone out of date yet. You know, even with technology, people still like to talk to each other. We're still a town of retail politics and retail government where people like face-to-face conversations. So it's worked pretty well. We take 30 people each year. And you can only apply once a year. And the applications are online at the city's site at parkcity.org. Just click on Leadership Park City in the lower right-hand corner under the news section. And I know I always get called, you know, like 2 weeks after the deadline, say, oh, can I apply? And I'm afraid you can. This is the only time. And the classes, the new class starts in October, so you apply now. Then we have a selection committee that selects the class in September, and then the new class starts in October and goes all through the year, meets once a month. And, you know, we've arranged it such that all working people can apply, anyone living or working in Summit, Wasatch, even Salt Lake County, who has the sort of the heart of their life up here in the Park City area, can apply. And most of the sessions are from 3 in the afternoon till 9 at night. And on the web page that you can get to, on our homepage, it shows all the dates for the whole year of when the classes are. So everything's lined up pretty carefully now. We got it together after 21 years.
Yeah. So the online application, of course, with the pertinent information, what else do people need to have? Letters of recommendation, things like that?
No, not, you know, we've tried really hard to get away from all of that just because it takes so much time. But they do have to have two people that will recommend them, but not letters of recommendation, just people whose names they can put down that we can check with, and often we do check with some of the people who are recommenders, but they don't have to write letters of recommendation. And really, there's only two questions other than the name and, you know, kind of the regular data that you would put in. And both of those questions about why you'd like to apply and then some of your past history are limited to 300 words each. Actually, you know, the program cuts it off at 300 words. So we've tried to keep it really streamlined and small and simple and not make this into some kind of major thing that it's not.
All right. Well, you have sponsors to the program, so it's free to the participants, but you do ask for a commitment.
Definitely the commitment. So if this is a program for people, and I'm trying to be cool now, use the word like lean in. I mean, these are like for people who really want to participate in the community in kind of a leadership role. And that doesn't mean political leadership, but it certainly means community leadership of some kind. It could be in your family, in your church, in a civic organization, whatever. But it's not just a pad your resume. We're not looking for that. We're looking for people who want to participate in the community. Certainly a lot of the nonprofits have had people in there. A lot of the people who have run for office have been through the program. Heck, we have 550 alumni now, so it's, you know, it seems like everyone's been through the program. But there's still lots of new people out there. There's lots of people who have been here a long time that would probably benefit from this. And really, more than anything else, I mean, we give you some skill training for sure, and we talk about some of the issues that are current. But the real benefit of all this is, I think, the network of contacts and friends and ideas you get from 30 other people who are in the community. And I've heard that over and over again over the years, that's one of the real strong points of the program.
Okay. Let's see. You've got the current class, and they've announced their project. It's Neighbor Day? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, Neighbor Day. You know, I think they've been concerned, as a lot of us have, about what the mayor talks about keeping Park City, and that's one of the major things that we—and when we say Park City, I'm a little more ecumenical geographically than the mayor. I look at the whole community, the school district, all the surrounding areas, too, but— you know, it's really the sense of neighborliness and community that we feel. That's why I was talking about retail community. I mean, it's not everything on the internet and through technology. We still like seeing each other at concerts on Main Street, at the Soy Market, at the various events, the Tour of Utah. We turn out for things here in this community, and that's a big part of what keeps Park City. In order to keep all those perpetuated, you need a lot of leaders. And when I say leaders, you know, I put that in quotes here because I always tell, what's the one thing any leader needs? And that's followers, you know? So, I mean, you have to act as followers sometimes, leaders at other times, just civically engaged, I guess is a better word for it all. And that's what we're looking for, people who are civically engaged in the future of this community.
Yeah.
And that's what this program is made for.
A previous class chose civility as its class project. How does that differ from being neighborly?
Well, they were talking about civility in the sense of a general civility. And I think, you know, we still stress that. I mean, we go to the county council meetings, the city council meetings, planning commission meetings. We ask people to be civil. I mean, and generally people are. They state their opinions. They realize other people can disagree with them. And we've seen that as a big issue in the country as a whole, that, you know, there seems to be this total polarization on every issue. You know, most issues don't need total polarization. They need just people listening to one another, conversing in a civil way, not personally attacking. Neighborliness certainly requires some civility, but it's more about, you know, the word neighbor comes from the ancient English about near dweller. So, you know, the class was really looking for distinct little neighborhoods and what you could do to bring your neighbors together. In my neighborhood, you know, a lot of us get together to walk our dogs on the North 40. Maybe that's not supposed to, but that's where we see a lot of each other, and are up in Round Valley. There's kind of a neighbor there, but I'd say out in Pine Brook in Deer Valley or over in Thames, it might be something different. So the class has been working on little projects. And again, you'd have to talk to them directly because I try to stay out of their soup on this one. That's just one of the things that they express their leadership on, about organizing something and doing it themselves. And they have. Each class has done that. So it's been great.
Okay.
So I think that's what that's about.
So you will not get special favor from Miles, even if you are his best friend. Friday, August 21st, last day to register, parkcity.org.
I don't even sit on the selection committee. We've made that from day one. You know, for 21 years, I haven't sat on the selection committee, but people still blame me, but I don't sit on it. Okay. So we're thrilled that so many people over the years have applied. And again, if people are listening here and have applied before and haven't gotten in, sometimes it takes 2 or 3 years because we can only take 30 people a year. Just the logistics of it. So please, if you're out there and you're still thinking of it, please apply and do it by next Friday.
Okay, Miles, thanks.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
8:53 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the official countdown begins tomorrow when we hit the 100 days till the first Utah chairlifts start running. In the studio with details about where to be to celebrate is Ski Utah President Nathan Rafferty. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie.
We all like snow, but can't we just get through summer, please?
This is your wake-up call. Get ready to go. Friday marks our 100-day to snow event at the Utah Olympic Park. It's actually, I think it's actually 99 days on Friday, and Thursday is 100 days. But it always, no matter when we do this, it always seems like it comes so early and so fast. So if you haven't knocked it off your summer list, get it done soon because we're skiing soon.
Okay, so what's happening?
So we're up at the Utah Olympic Park with a bunch of resort representatives. We'll all be jumping into the pool. Invite anybody who wants to do that with us. There are 20% discount coupons for the Fly Freestyle intro clinics up at the UOP. We'll be giving away free snow cones and talking about season pass deals. And there'll also be a drawing for a Utah Olympic Park gold pass. It gets you unlimited access for a day for all the fun stuff they do up there.
All right, so just an opportunity to learn about season passes, or will resorts actually be able to sell passes?
I don't think they'll actually be able to sell passes, but you'll be able to learn about it. And really, this is just a PR event for us to get everybody in that mindset. The best deals you're going to be able to get on season passes always come early. So the earlier, the best value is to buy early.
All right, everybody's welcome to come.
Absolutely. Everybody's welcome to come, and it should be a great day.
All right, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. there at the Utah Olympic Park. You've done this in years past in the Salt Lake Valley, so trying something new?
We have, yeah. We're just moving around, doing something a little bit new. We've done this down at the food trucks area down in Salt Lake and giving away free snow cones. And everybody likes a free snow cone, right? And we, you know, it's important for us to not only talk about season passes, but especially the Ski Utah passports that we offer. So our fifth grade pass that offers 3 days of skiing at every resort in the state for $35. And again, talk about all the great season pass deals there are for the resorts.
All right. Meanwhile, since we've last talked, we've had the signing of the Mountain Accord that moves us into the second phase. We're moving in the right direction here?
Yeah, I think so. Last week was a signing, and that was a big milestone, but it was really kind of dropping the start flag on the really heavy lifting. So while it felt like a lot of work at the time, I think the really hard work is yet to come. So there's a bill to be passed and details to be sorted out with land trade and all sorts of stuff. So, but that milestone was really all those parties coming together saying we're moving in the right direction and we're committing to working hard for the next year or two to come to make something happen.
Yeah, and so what about Ski Utah's plans to connect the Wasatch Back resorts? Is that even possible now with what's been approved?
Sure. No, absolutely. It's evolved a little bit. You know, we've always maintained that the cheapest and easiest way to do it, connecting the resorts, is with chairlifts and ski runs. If that gets replaced with, let's say, a tunnel and a train between Alta and Brighton, between Big and Little Cottonwood Canyon, we'd call that a connection. There's always going to be the fallback plan if something like that doesn't come to fruition. There's always going to be that opportunity on private land to be able to connect all these resorts. And you see it, you know, right out your window, Park City and Canyons connecting, and that's the first connection of the three that we need, so two to go.
Yeah, so that private land is the key in here, and it's still you're still able to do it.
It is, absolutely, mm-hmm. Yep.
As long as you have the necessary permits and stuff.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what else you been working on? Getting ready for winter.
You know, our office, it's amazing. It seems like early August, just it's full-blown winter down there. So we're getting a magazine out, updating our website. Everybody's running around with their heads cut off down there, and it's an exciting time. You know, all these deadlines are coming together. So, and season pass pricing for all the resorts are just being announced. So, it's an exciting time.
Yeah. How big of a promotion are we giving this connection between Canyons and Park City?
It's hard to overstate what a big deal that is to have the largest resort in the U.S. in our backyard. And, you know, at Ski Utah, we've got to play fair and promote everybody, but we always like to hitch our cart to that winning horse. And there are some big projects between the Park City connection is certainly one of the top, and Snowbird's Hidden Peak facility is a huge deal at Snowbird. They've invested $35 million in that resort this summer with a redo to the Cliff Lodge. And then over at Solitude with Deer Valley's entree to Big Cottonwood Canyon, they've got a new lift, a summit lift, that's going to be really awesome for that resort and a high-speed lift getting you all the way to the top and really improving the flow. And if you haven't skied over at Solitude, that place is punches above its weight for sure.
Yeah. Do you expect to see, a real noticeable difference because of Deer Valley's ownership?
I think absolutely. I don't think it's going to happen overnight. Well, you know, maybe I take that back. I think when you pull into the parking lot the first day going skiing at Solitude, I think you are going to notice a difference. And, you know, Deer Valley does what they do very well. And I think they're going to take a lot of that knowledge over to Solitude. So I can't wait what they're going to see. I grew up skiing at Solitude, and the mountain, the bones of that place are incredible. And Deer Valley is just going to improve upon that.
Okay. Anything else?
No, that's it. Thanks so much. Come join us on Friday.
All right. Nathan, thanks for coming in. Nathan Rafferty is the executive director of Utah Ski Association.